EONM, eradicating face, just EONM.org. And there you'll find links to our Facebook and also to our Twitter.
Okay. Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Jacqueline Keeler with Eradicating Offensive Native Masketry and Other Efforts on Indigenous Peoples Day. Thanks, Jackie.
Thanks.
KWU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Cross Cultural Rhythms at the 40th Avenue Garage, a showcase of music, dance, and spoken word performances, all sharing roots in African culture. Cross Cultural Rhythms will take place on Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage, 1711 Southeast 40th Avenue in Portland. This is a benefit for the Obo Addy Legacy Project. Confirmed performances include Ghanaian drumming and dance, South African boot dance and music, multiple spoken word artists, and more. Again, that's Cross Cultural Rhythms, Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with Leon Russell, Wednesday, October 29th. Tickets and information for an evening with Leon Russell on October 29th are available at aladdin-theater.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Community College, where the Southeast Center at 82nd and Division is now a full-fledged campus, allowing students to earn an associate's degree in their own neighborhood. PCC celebrates on October 18th at noon with campus tours, local food vendors, and live Afro-Cuban music by Maleo de Cuba. pcc.edu/celebrate. Now, time for the bullet. Let's the bullet. Let's the bullet. The rift of it. Let's liberate. Rift the rift radio. Time. For the the working. The clashes. Educate. Organize. Activate. Yeah, the time is now. Look up to the past, to the 30s. Yeah, to the sit down, to the strike. It's time to make things right. We've been taking it for far too long. Round the labor movement getting real strong. We the we got Labor Radio with your host, the Megan and Mayor.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, the show of, by, and for the working class, every Monday at 6 p.m.
with your second Monday hosts, Megan and Meredith. Tonight's show will focus on the state of our railroads, the increasingly dangerous working conditions that railroad workers are joining together to improve, and the historical and economic significance of the railroad to our economy.
Up next, Megan is speaking to Robert Hill, a longtime rank-and-file railroad worker.
Well, welcome to Labor Radio. Can you just give our listeners a little background, who you are and who you do work with?
Okay, my name's Robert Hill. I'm on the steering committee and a webmaster for Railroad Workers United. The local I belong to is Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, Local 238 out of Tacoma.
And can you tell us a little bit about this caucus, this rank and file caucus project, Railroad Workers United?
Yeah, Railroad Workers United started back when it was originally called ROCU. And it was with the operating crafts for the railroad. The UTU at the time was trying to merge with the BLET, so a bunch of rank-and-file members across the nation from all the different carriers decided to form together to get this pushed through and try to communicate with other members in the rail community, because we're so isolated. We're in large numbers across the nation, but when it comes to our locals, we're kind of isolated, and we have a tendency not to hear what another local that's even 30 miles away is doing, or how they feel, or what their attitudes on certain issues. So that was the primary reason for the start of Railroad Workers United. After that failed, that's when Railroad Workers United was formed. It went from Rock U to Railroad Workers United. So we're rank and file members from across the nation, and we got members in Japan, Mexico, Canada, and it's for all the crafts: signal maintainers, track maintenance away, carmen, clerks, the whole works. We get out there, and when we have certain issues, which a lot of us do, there's plenty of issues out there to tackle, and we all try to form and communicate and find ways to better attack these issues that we're having.
Paint us a picture of the kind of work that you guys do, you who would be in Railroad Workers United.
That's one thing that the public probably doesn't see a whole heck of a lot of what we do, except for when we're blocking or crossing or something. But typically, the typical railroader, as far as on the road, that works in TY&E, which is train, yards, and engines, works on a 24/7 schedule. We're on call, and we got to make ourselves available due to strict availability policies that the company has. But we get called out all hours of the day and night, and a lot of responsibilities are putting trains together, doing inspections, moving freight from one yard to another. And then you have people in those yards that switch out these trains to build cars that go into different destinations. You can look at the yards as like a post office. The mail comes in, it gets sorted, then the mail goes out. So we have these different commodities and different manifests that need to go to certain locations across the country, and they get split up in these yards and shuffled around, and that's how a train gets built, and then the train goes to that destination. Then it gets switched out again and goes to another destination. So that's primarily what we do.
Tell us a little bit about, if you know anything about the major companies that are moving freight.
Your class ones out there, you have BNSF, you have Union Pacific, you have CSX, Norfolk Southern, Kansas City Southern, and those are the main class ones that operate out there. There's probably another 1,500 independent class two and class three railroads out there.
Who sort of oversees our rail in this country?
It's all private. The government owns very little. There's a few state lines out there that do have some rail, but it's all private. And for the most part, most of these railroads all get subsidized by the government for track updates and infrastructure, because freight and transportation is very crucial to our economy. It's directly tied into it.
So why don't we talk a little bit about the campaign that you guys are running right now, which is against the single employee or one man crews. How long has this, can you tell us a little bit about, paint a picture of what a one man crew looks like, and then how long has this been coming down the pike for you guys?
Well, for us at Railroad Workers United, we've been fighting on this for 5 to 6 years. I know I have personally. We started this campaign that we knew that this was coming due to the fact that the carriers, which are the different railroads across the U.S., have been trying to negotiate this since 2004. So it wasn't a surprise. We just weren't expecting it this soon. I could probably go on for hours as far as the dangers is with the one-man crews, and I just know how the railroads operate, and it would be quite disastrous. We've got a lot of problems with lineups. We got a lot of problems with fatigue. We got a lot of problems with maintenance. They're cutting crews back, not only in the cab, but with carmen, in around houses for inspecting locomotives. They're getting inspections extended, and that puts us members at a lot of risk due to the fact that things just aren't getting inspected as often as what they should be. And then you leave a one man inside the cab, and as bad as what the lineups are and the way the railroads operate, it's a recipe for disaster. So if something were to happen, the engineer would not be able to get off that engine to go back and see what the issue is or what the problem is. So if we're in a city area, something can derail, we don't know. We could probably get out and look and maybe see fire or see dust or see something like that, and then try to get back to the locomotive and try to report it. In the meantime, you're wasting a lot of valuable time. And even if there isn't anything that happens, we're going to more likely be across some public crossings that people aren't going to be able to get back and forth, as far as, you know, your first responders, if there's an emergency, not even with the railroad, but at somebody's home, at your home, responders aren't going to be able to get to it because they're going to have this train in the way. I can't legally go back and do anything. I got to wait for somebody to show up to be able to assist me to be able to move that train. So there's a lot of issues involved with the one-man operation. We came out ahead on this one, but this is just the beginning of the game. The other carriers are going to be trying to do the same thing. Now that the cat's out of the bag, they're going to be a lot more forceful and using a lot of the media and doing a lot of PR in their favor to make us, the workers, look bad to try to promote this thing. So they try using the positive train control as a method of saying, well, we don't need that conductor anymore because we have these computers. Well,
and what is positive train control?
It's a computerized system, and they use GPS and stuff, and it tracks the train. And if you happen to come up on a slow order, which is a track defect, and you got to be down to a certain speed, it will start to slow you down. If you don't react in a certain amount of time, it'll actually bring the train to a stop. Same thing with the red block, coming up the red block. If you're not doing the proper steps as far as throttling off or getting into dynamics to slow down the train, then the computer will step in and put the train in emergency or slow it down. Something that the unions have been fighting for 10, 15 years. This is something, a technology that we want that would provide safety for the public and for us. But what we are rallying for is that it's a safety enhancement. It's not meant to replace a person in the cab.
Because the person in the cab can exercise real judgment about the situation at hand.
Absolutely, and this is a proven fact. There's a German engineer in Germany that have one of these maglev super fast trains with all the latest computers and technology and stuff. And the press asked and says, well, why do you still keep a person in the cab when you don't need to? Well, he stated quite frankly that no matter what you have for a computer, there's no way that a computer can feel that something's wrong or be able to react as quick as what the human being can. So, you know, he recognized the fact that a computer can't replace a human being. And that's the same thing with this. This is kind of the carrier's way to get back at us. We've been fighting for this positive train control. We've gone through Congress to get this enacted. Their way to get back at us is to cut a crew member. So they're making it even, you know, instead of enhancing safety, they're going backwards.
What would you like our listeners to know, or our radio listeners to do? Is there anything they can do to support you guys on this campaign that's really about safety for more than the workers, sounds like, could have safety consequences for our communities?
Well, I think the whole railroad industry in general has gotten greedy beyond their means, and it's becoming a real issue. It's becoming a real problem because now you get several factors. They're trying to go one man a cab. They're cutting back on carmen. Carmen are professionals. They're experienced. They know what to look for in car inspections to detect a problem before it's going to happen. Most of your conductors or switchmen don't know. They don't have the training that a carman does in order to perform these tests. Then you get the locomotive facilities. They're cutting back employees there more and more and more and more. Our engines consistently break down en route. And that's creating a safety hazard for the public and for us as well. They get their inspections for long-haul trains now, these oil trains, these coal trains, dangerous commodity trains extended even farther out so they can go farther without having to be inspected. You know, the industry in general has just gotten out of line, and the best way that the listeners can help out is by contacting their congressmen. You got a lot of environmental agencies or groups that are out there trying to rally support and bring up public attention as well. And, you know, it's just amazing to me. I've been railroading for 14 years, and I've never seen it get to the point it is now. It's just greed is totally taking over common sense.
That was Megan speaking with Robert Hill of the Railroad Workers Caucus about their ongoing campaign against one-man crews and for railroad safety measures. To follow their struggle, check out their website at railroadworkersunited.org. You're listening to Labor Radio at KBOO 90.7 FM.
All aboard!
And that was Paul Tremaine and his orchestra with their interpretation of I've Been Working on the Railroad. You are listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, streaming online at kboo.fm. And to help us place the contemporary working conditions in rail in context, we spoke with Tacoma Community College economics professor Rob Larson. We're talking about the trend towards one-man crews or the leaning down of these operations.
Yes, I can't believe that.
So do you know about that?
I did because I read about it in Labor Notes. Insane move. I am amazed. Just generally for your listeners, if you live anywhere near one of our many Pacific Rim, you know, our rail lines, those large rail beds, they are crawling with endless trains of those big black, you know, oil and gas containers. And those are the things that whenever anything goes wrong with the train, they blow up in a giant chain and burn forever. And they're extremely dangerous and poisonous. And we're going down to one-person crew for the whole train.
We're hoping you could give us a little of the historical context of these major railroad companies as they're working today.
So, obviously, you know, we have maintained rail shipping in the country for a very long time. It used to be the main way you shipped goods around, and the railroads were these tools of the great monopolists and robber barons of the 1800s, and they would fight each other by trying to buy each other's railroads or make them not carry each other's cargo and such. So they've always been sort of this focus of power. Since the 80s, they were deregulated kind of aggressively, and now what we're seeing is ownership of the rail lines is in the hands of four gigantic firms that run these large sets of rail lines. The ones we're speaking about, the one we're speaking about here, of course, is BNSF, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, which is a gigantic rail shipping conglomerate with a huge amount of track miles in the west and on the Pacific in the northern part of the country. And they're an extremely large line. And we should mention, of course, they were bought a couple years ago by Warren Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, which is kind of relevant for this. So as these rails have become, they're sort of going through a big change in their usage as well, because historically they would ship dry goods, especially grain, you know, the products of the harvest from the Midwest and the Plain States, ship those east to the big cities and the big markets to sell, or ship them west to the big ports to sell overseas, which is a lot of what we do out here, of course. You mentioned how trade-dependent we are in Washington State. That's very true. What we're seeing, though, is that lately a lot of agricultural firms are having a slightly harder time getting their grain shipped before it can spoil out of the middle part of the country, because the trains are getting so filled up with these oil tankers carrying, you know, pressurized oil and natural gas. And the main, I mean, one reason that's happening is simply because we in the West Coast have been meeting some early successes on a mixed basis of resisting the building of new pipelines across the country, like obviously Keystone XL is the most prominent, but also large oil and gas transshipment portals on the West Coast. And this is a very reasonable activist tactic. As long as we keep burning these fossil fuels, we are guaranteeing that us later in our lives, and especially the future generations, will be completely screwed by the effects of this. People like to resist this claim because when scientists say something that people don't like, suddenly everyone's smarter than the scientists are. So that's a problem. But it means that, yeah, these trains are, they're carrying a fantastic amount of highly explosive material, and they're running on lines and with materials that are, and, you know, rolling stock, that are sort of historically up to a standard of carrying, you know, corn and wheat, and now we're carrying extremely explosive energy products around. So there is some risk there. We just had another large explosion of fire in central Canada the other day, so this is an ongoing danger we're facing. The amazing thing is what you brought up, that BNSF is continuing this long-run process that it and its predecessor companies have been doing for literally decades of gradually whittling down the number of operating employees that are running a given train consist. And back in the 70s, you would see a half dozen men on a significant-sized train consist, you know, moving a lot of cars. And by the time you get to the 80s, it's down to just a couple men, and about 10 years ago, you got down to two or three. And we stand at two at the moment, and I believe it's an engineer and conductor, and I'm going to reach the limits of my understanding of exactly how the train works mechanically, but going down to one single operator of the entire train consist, you know, going on day and night, shipping these extremely large volumes of extremely explosive material around. It's amazing that they're willing to go down that final level of workforce reduction at a time when they're a piece of Warren Buffett's empire. They're a part of Berkshire Hathaway. And, yeah, what we're seeing is sort of what you said earlier. It's a question of reducing costs. And if you can get your trains down from one operating employee down to two, you've cut your labor costs, you know, your unit labor costs, down by the best part of 50%, which is a very dramatic cost improvement to make and to show to your boss higher up in the conglomerate. But really what we're seeing is a ruling class billionaire's corporate property putting our lives in a moderate amount of danger. It's a pretty significant aspect of the way the market works. You know, these firms don't pay the full costs when their trains explode. And if the cost of litigating with the survivors and doing a little bit of token environmental cleanup, if that cost is less than it would cost to keep two men on those trains, I mean, we have a lot of historical examples where firms chose to let people die because the court cost of coping with that was less than whatever expense would keep those people alive. So it's a very menacing type of historic cost-benefit analysis that we have a long history of in capitalism. It's a bummer to see it taking on these gigantically dangerous proportions right now.
And that was Rob Larson speaking to Labor Radio about the dangerous trends in the rail industry. Rob is author of Bleakonomics, A Heartwarming Introduction to Financial Catastrophe, the Jobs Crisis, and Environmental Destruction.
Thanks for tuning in to Second Monday Labor Radio on KABU. You can find us online at kabu.fm/laborradio and on Facebook. We'd like to share a few events coming up this month. On Friday, October 17th, you can catch Harsha Walia at Lewis and Clark College Templeton Student Center as part of her book tour, Undoing Border Imperialism. On Sunday, October 19th, from noon to 3 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square, the Portland Association of Teachers is sponsoring a quality education festival to promote creating the schools Portland students deserve. There will be student performances, hands-on activities, prizes, food, face painting, and informational booths on how to get involved creating great community schools together. On Monday, October 20th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at SEIU 49, there will be a community hearing on the City of Portland Fair Wage Policy. The City of Portland adopted a fair wage policy in 1998, which is currently $10.38 per hour plus $1.98 in benefits. Is this a living wage in Portland? Should our tax dollars go for poverty wages? Come hear testimony from affected workers and their allies. You can show your support for the 15 Now campaign and hear responses from city commissioners. On Tuesday, October 28th at 6 p.m. at SEIU 503, there will be a symposium called Shared Struggles Equals Shared Victories, bringing rank and file as well as top leaders from the LGBTQ community, labor unions, and other progressive groups together to educate, collaborate, and mobilize.
And that's it for this edition of Labor Radio on KBOO Portland, bringing you the news and views of, by, and for working people every Monday night at 6 p.m. Up next is Prison Pipeline. Don't change that dial. To play us out, we're going to hear a song from union activist, locomotive engineer, and folk singer John Paul Wright. You can find his music on www.railroadmusic.org. This is Railroad Man.
I can sit right here for an hour, or I can pull 10,000 tons. I know all the back ways into everything, and I'll be here to get the job done.
of my friends, Casey Jones and that old Sam Webb, or you might have heard of old John Henry. He's a man that drove that steam trail down. I'm a railroad man, I'm a railroad man, riding up on the train. I'm a railroad man, I'm a railroad man, do my part.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to support More Love for Linda, a tribute and celebration of life for Linda Hornbuckle, who passed away Saturday, October 4th. A benefit concert was already planned to help raise funds for her medical bills, and now will raise funds for the family debt and serve as a public tribute and celebration of Linda's life. More Love for Linda will be held Tuesday, October 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Crystal Ball.